All right, our third presenter probably needs no introduction for most of the people in this room. However, I would be remiss if I did not remind you that, like Jay Bruder, he has a radio show, and it's on Sundays. So if you happen to be driving out of here in a northerly direction between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock on Sunday, you can listen to 2 hours of what Dick likes to call obsolete music. great music of every description. Dick, of course, is responsible for countless reissues and vital publications. He's added inestimably to our knowledge, not only of American roots music, but roots music around the world. Today, he is going to be fairly close to home, though, and he is going to be talking about North Carolina's own Blue Sky Boys, who are the subject of a forthcoming book that will be released by University of North Carolina Press. We don't know when, but we hope very, very soon. Dick Spotswood.
We got many local yokels in here today, or is this all Arskin? Okay. Alan Justice, would you stand up? Is that not Alan? I'm sorry. My glasses aren't as good as they could be. I'm going to read a list of people to thank, and Alan Justice is at the top of the list. I thought he was going to be here this morning. He is the second cousin of the Blue Sky Boys, and when Bill Bolick died in 2008, Alan became the trustee of all of Bill's records and papers and musical instruments and everything. Bill's widow didn't keep any of that. It just transferred over to Alan. Some of it is coming to the Southern Folklife Collection here at UNC, and I think more of it may be on the way. Some of you might be interested to know, especially those of you familiar with the Blue Sky Boys, that Bill's record collection had records by Furry Lewis, Barbecue Bob, one or two other people of that ilk, as well as the normal country music of the 30s and 40s that you might expect. I'm going to assume unfamiliarity on the part of at least some of you, so supposedly if I hit this, it's going to play the Blue Sky Boys.
Happy sunny verdant growing dale, sweetest joy gladness ever there prevail. Sunshine ever lingers on the grand majestic hill. Happy sunny side of life.
In 1936, they were 18 and 16 years old, respectively. Little boys that had grown up in Hickory, North Carolina, about 100 miles or so to the west of us in the rolling countryside, the foothills of the Appalachians, is what Bill Bolick liked to call them. And it was famous, Hickory was and still is, for being a mill town, a cotton mill town, and also a town where there were furniture factories. Their father wanted to keep their kids out of the mills because he had been in the mills himself and had gone to some length to educate himself, get himself out of the mills, build a nice, big, solid, multi-room brick house that would hold all of the Bolick's six children, and they managed to do that. Garland Bolick brought a radio for their home in 1924, and Bill grew up listening to Chubby Parker and Bradley Kincaid and Mac and Bob and other stars of the WLS barn dance out of Chicago, the National Barn Dance, I think is the official title. Isn't that right, Steve? people get that wrong, including me, so but at least I try. And They basically came out of the Depression. Bill graduated. They were very smart kids. Bill graduated from high school in 1933 when he was still, he had not turned 16 yet. But there were no jobs to be had. I think he worked in an auto body shop for a while, and then He was a basement clerk in the local Kreskes, and Earl, a couple of years behind him. The future didn't look any better for Earl, and by the time Earl was 15, he took a guitar that had been in the family and literally just hopped a freight train and went out to Hobo for several months with some friends. When Earl came back, it created something of a family crisis, and it was decided that because there was enough music around, and Bill especially had been attracted to the music, that they were going to start singing. Bill had already been to WBT in Charlotte with Homer Sherrill's East Hickory Nut String Band, and they went over to broadcast out of WWNC in Asheville, too. All of this during the summer of 1935. They quit, and taking the wonderful and unfortunately unrecorded banjo player Lute Eisenhower with them. But the Blue Sky Boys came back again and rehired Homer Sherrill, the fiddle player, who became a Blue Sky Boys. An awful lot of this is like you need the scorecard to read, to see where everybody's coming and going, which is typically the history of country music as it evolved in the 30s and 40s. But they eventually reached WGST in Atlanta, Georgia in 1937, and even though that was a minor league station compared to, I'm blanking on the big Atlanta country station where they had the barn dance call letters. WSB, thank you. And it's easier when there's four letters for some reason. And they managed to be resident there until 1940, which is the period of time that they were making a lot of these wonderful Bluebird records that you see pictured up there. I'm Just Here to Get My Baby Out of Jail was a Carlin Hardy song that they sort of just took over from Carlin Hardy. They needed to record some things in 1936, and that became a big hit. The Sunny Side of Life was another big hit. The other side of that record was the hymn called Where the Soul of Man Never Dies. All of these are still standard repertory today through the Blue Sky Boys recordings. At the time, they only had, and we'll see pictures of these instruments a little bit later on, Bill had what he said, a tissue paper thin homemade mandolin that he'd acquired for $20 in a pawn shop. And this little thin little sounding mandolin that we heard on the Sunny Side of Life just now was his instrument for the first two of their RCA sessions. I'm getting a little bit ahead of my story. I should talk about when they came to record, because this was a story that Bill Bolick liked. Yeah, I need to keep track of the time too, because we're going to look at a 5-minute video. I don't want us to be late for lunch. When they got to make records, there had been a fallout between them, Homer Sherrill, and the sponsor of Crazy Water Crystals, for whom they were broadcasting on WWNC. At the time, they were called the Blue Ridge Hillbillies. And after the fallout, they and Homer quit, and then Fincher, the Crazy Water Crystals guys, told RCA that they would not be there to record. Meanwhile, Homer goes and finds a couple of other musicians. They become the Blue Ridge Hillbillies. The Blue Sky Boys, not knowing their session was canceled, they show up on the 16th of June to make records. And as Bill told this wonderful story, they're sitting out in the waiting room, of the second floor of the RCA warehouse in Charlotte. And Oberstein, comes back and forth a few times. And these two kids are just sitting there reading magazines. And he says, what do you think this is, a waiting room? And Earl, who was only, 16 at the time, but very big and imposing, stands up and says, I don't give a damn what it is. And he starts to pick up his guitar and walk out. And Oberstein's parting shot was to be, oh, I know who you are. You're those kids that sound like the Monroe Brothers, aren't you? No. That was a big no. Well, they fortunately settled that, and when they sang, as Bill related it, Oberstein said, oh, you guys don't sound a bit like the Monroe Brothers. Come right in. And so the recordings were made on the spot. There were three sessions that day on the 16th of June, 1936. Somebody I've never heard of and whose records I've never heard in the morning called the Brown Brothers. Nobody seems to know who they were. And then in the evening, Cliff and Bill Carlisle. It was a nice day. I'd like to have been there myself. But the Blue Sky Boys did, I forget, either 8 or 10 titles within the space of 2 or 3 hours. I mean, in those days, you did everything in one take. Bluebird was a 35-cent label. The Montgomery Ward records retailed for as little as 20 cents each if you bought, you know, 5 of them for $1. And so second takes were a big luxury, and they did not ordinarily do that. Well, the records caught on. And the songs, a lot of their songs became permanent repertoire. And I thought I would play, here we go. Now, I don't push this, do I tell you?
Yes.
Let's hear the cover versions. This is about 60 seconds worth of Johnny and Jack and the Everly Brothers and Ira and Charlie Louvin.
I think they're having some issues.
Are we having troubles over there? I can skip that if you want. Yeah, I hate it when the AV messes. All right, we're not going. Are we not going to have the video either?
The video's good.
The video's good. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's all right because I'll have time to tell a little bit more of the story. Unfortunately, those were the best years that the Blue Sky Boys had in the 1930s because they finally went to WPTF right here in Raleigh. Where they really flourished. And, I mean, they were able to buy, because they always liked to perform in business suits. Bill did not like the word hillbilly music, as he put it. He said it kind of threw off on the people when you used that expression. And so the cover of their songbook says folk songs and hymns, which is very interesting because clearly his notion of folk songs was not the same as Alan Lomax's notion of folk songs. And yet, they were not entirely separate universes either. While I'm on that little sidetrack, there was an album of records that RCA put out in 1941 that was curated, edited, or whatever, assembled by John Lomax. The Carter Family, Arthur Smith, Yid Tanner, Skillet Liquors, the Monroe Brothers, Uncle Dave Macon were all on this album of records. But not the Blue Sky Boys. In all fairness, the Delmore Brothers weren't either. Interesting because they all did traditional material, and one can only speculate as to why the Lomaxes apparently decided that the Blue Sky Boys were not traditional. They finally got fired from WPTF because the program director there, a guy named Graham Pointer, apparently who was on WPTF for years, I think he only retired in the 70s, Bill quoted him as saying that nobody who totes a guitar is going to make more money than I do, and unfortunately that's what was happening for them. That was in 1941. They went to in Greenville, South Carolina for a little bit, and then Bill was drafted. Earl enlisted so that they could come out of the Army at the same time. They all figured they were going to be home in a year. This is what everybody thought in the spring, or this is August of 41. And, of course, Earl wound up getting severely injured in the Battle of the Bulge, and Bill wound up in the South Pacific, not injured or anything at all. Bill managed to not be hurt, but they, of course, came out of that situation very different people from when they went in. You can see it from the photographs, as we will show you in the video. The pre-war photographs show these nice, innocent young boys with sweet little faces and the little instruments and coats and ties and sometimes little farmer get-up for the feed commercials and things. And after the war, they were very, very different people. They didn't last too long in the music industry because they were expected to perform songs that the song publishers were pushing. By that time, Acuff, Rose, and Hill and Range had started up business in Nashville, and everybody wanted people that were on the major labels, RCA, Columbia, and so forth, to be recording songs that could be monetized through copywriting, publishing, and royalty collections. Well, the Bolicks always preferred to do traditional material, and In the book that I have prepared for the Southern Folklife Collection, UNC, that'll be published here, the plan is to have music from the radio programs that they did on WGST from 1946 and 7, and then WCYB in Bristol, Virginia, Tennessee in 1949. Many dozens of songs. They were still performing the pre-war material from Bluebird on those post-war radio shows. And those are arguably the best records they made, better than the RCA studio records. In any case, they had a couple of big hits, most notably Kentucky, but other songs we know from that period are Behind These Prison Walls of Love and Paper Boy, Please Buy a Paper from Me So I Can Buy Something to Eat, and a few other, you know, deeply sad songs that still resonated people in the 1940s. But of course, honky-tonk music was coming to eclipse all of that kind of music, and the Blue Sky Boys and Charlie Monroe and Wade Maynard and Molly O'Day and people like that were gradually being sort of pushed out of the business to make room for people like Ernest Tubb and Little Jimmy Dickens and Webb, the people with the star-spangled nudie suits and the honky-tonk bands and the steel guitars. And Bill was not fond of that music. And so finally, when Earl took an aptitude test, found out he would be a good machinist, Lockheed hired him away, broke up the Blue Sky Boys. Earl had a terrific career at Lockheed. He didn't retire until 1988. Bill Bolick went back to college and got practically on the dean's list at Lenoir Ryan College, just was down the road in Hickory. But he never really knew what to do for himself. He took a day job in the post office and kept that the rest of his life. Every once in a while, the Blue Sky Boys would reunite. And whenever they did, it was always a powerful occasion because they hadn't lost the songs, they hadn't lost the voices, they hadn't lost the instruments, and they could still do what... Well, let's hear a little medley of their songs right now. Are we ready to go with that? Okay.
Do the video after that.
That's the video.
This is
the video.
Video,
sorry.
Oh. Sometimes man proposes and God disposes, you know. No, here it is. God damn, all right. There's supposed to be music. I can take a question or two while they're fixing up, if you like. Any? Sorry, I didn't see any hand.
In back?
Yes. I'm going to say about 4 to 6 weeks. That's where they were when they got their draft notice. WWNC 1935.
Are we coming to try to play here?
Oh, okay.
Excuse us, just another little technical thing we tried to avoid.
Didn't they attempt a comeback in the 1960s?
No, Earl was never willing to do a comeback. Earl had a great day job, and he wasn't going to give that up for nothing. He also had a family, and his wife did not want to move to Nashville. They had an offer to go on the Opry, and they had to say no because Earl wouldn't. Jerry wouldn't let Earl go.
It's over here.
That was a one-off. There was another one. They were at a folk festival at Carnegie Hall, I think, at the same time. And then in 1974 and 75, they came up. They played Duke University up here, both springs of both of those years, and they did a little spate of festivals for. Carlton Haney in 74, but that was it. Bill wanted to go out again, and Earl was never willing to do it.
Wrong white rope, but I bought last June. I'm going to get changed, cause it fits too soon. And the old gray horse that I used to drive, hitch him to the chair in the morning.
Oh, them golden slippers. Oh, them golden slippers. Them golden slippers. I'm going to wear them, cause they look so neat. Oh, them golden slippers. Oh, them golden slippers. Them golden slippers. I'm going to wear to walk the golden street.
We think you'll like this next number, friend, because it's one of the oldest hymns that we know, Whispering Hope.
Soft as the voice of an angel, breathing a lesson. Hope with a gentle persuasion whispers her comforting word. Wait till the darkness is over. Wait till the tempest is done. Hope for the sunshine tomorrow after the shower is gone.
Time for another one of those old-fashioned hymns, friends. One that we recorded on Bluebird Record years ago, This Evening Light.
Lord, the ransom are returning, rope and shining crystal white, leaping, shouting home to Zion. Happy in the evening light. Oh, I'm full of golden glory stream, glory stream. Your light is coming fast. Now in Christ, found the freedom, which eternally shall last. Voices singing in the silvery moonlight. Kentucky, I miss the hound dog chasing coon. I know that my mother, dad, and sweetheart are waiting for me. Kentucky, I will be coming soon. When I die, I want to rest upon a graceful mountain so high. For that is where God will look for me.
If we have time to do this, on there twice, but it is time to end, and I'm running over time, but I want to say special thanks. Seth Winter is in the back. Seth is the guy who did the wonderful sound restorations for the Bear Family Collection of all of the Blue Skies. What?
I did the metal part.
Okay, I don't want to go into detail. I do that bad enough on my own. And of course, the final product was issued by Mr. Bear Family himself, who's occupying the front yard here today. Richard. We owe both of you guys a whole lot. Gary Reed, who is not here, put out most of the material that you just heard, because I took most of for the video from the radio broadcast, which is why you got the little announcements along with the songs. Anyway, that's the Blue Sky Boys, a little bit of an introduction to do. Do I need to thank any? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I should publicize Chris and Tom Diamond took their Capitol record from 1965 and somewhat as a special favor to me, reissued that on our Hooli in 2012. And that's the thing that the Ed Cann and D.K. Wilgus, the professional academic folklorists, put together. And that's where the Elizabethan ballads and the old blues, that's really for the folk music crowd who bought the records by the, low dozens, I think. But it is back in print, and in 1965, they could still sing their tushes off. Thank you.